That is why you need to do these things.
We're up and running.
Cool, you sound good.
Good.
But you always do.
Well. You charmer. Oh, I just didn't realise we'd get the train as well. That's a... A nice added audio effect.
But that's what I mean. Like, this place is surprising to me because I've drove past it so many times on my way to Helens Bay, and it just looks like a walled garden. Like, you know, like a garden with a wall around it. And now I'm like here in the middle of it, in the back of it. I'm like, dude, this is a forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm shocked that there's just like this little like nature reserve in a place where I can also hear a train.
Yeah. No, it's very cool. I feel like my connection to this area is more with the little country park, Crawfordsburn. Love going down there. Like, how over the years of like spending more time outside, it's just so close to home and like an easy place just to even cycle down to.
Yeah.
And like one of the few places that I can think of off the top of my head that has like trees and a waterfall, and you just go right out under the sea as well, all within this like tiny little area.
So true. I think we take that for like really granted in Northern Ireland, because you go to somewhere like you know, you think Spain, or like, you know, somewhere like Hawaii, where you think like, oh, beaches, wow. But it's just beaches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't get the forest road that takes you there, or you don't get to have like the mountains in the background. Mm. It's usually like the nature's so separate. Whereas here, we just got such a merge of everything. It's class.
All in a tiny, tiny space, too. Bro,
like, you're cycling from your house.
Yeah, like, I'll just cycle past the waterfall through the forest on my way to the
like,
sea.
That's inappropriate. Like, people around the world will drive, like, 4 hours to see a waterfall. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess that's probably why there has been a lot of filming done in the country. Mm. You know, like, the amount of diverse, like, nature scenes that you can get in this tiny, tiny space. It's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. They're like, we really need a mountain shot. Okay, and then we really need a beach shot. It's like, fine, it's 5 minutes down the road. You know what I mean? You don't need to hop on a plane and fly somewhere. It's like literally like hop on the back of my car and I'll drive you there, famous movie person.
I so took it for granted when I was growing up as well. Like, you just don't know.
But that's your prerogative as a young person, you know? It's to resent what you have and then so you can later appreciate it.
Yeah, very true.
It's the hero's journey.
I suppose even just like until you go away, like until you go on the journey, you don't do the full cycle back to, you know, appreciate what
was
there.
Think the Shire is crap until you've been in the mines of Moria. You know what I mean? Until you've had a dragon like burn your finger off.
Fair.
It's never in that moment that the Shire feels so sweet.
You know? Yeah. It is nice to be sitting here like sun shining, birds tweeting, even train going past. And yeah, like a younger version of me would have been like, I'm bored.
You're such an integrated person now. You know, you find a way to reconcile the commercial industrial train line with the yogi nature. Here we are sitting underneath, I don't know what type of tree that is, an oak tree or something. It's very romantic, you know.
I guess so.
We're just here like under a tree just talking about our lives. It's good. So where are we? Let's paint that picture.
So in the vicinity of Crawfordsburn Country Park, I think we've intimated, in Helens Bay, and we are here by the walled garden where we are going to get active outdoors and our hands in the dirt for the next while.
Yo. I didn't do my workout this morning because I figured this would be a free one.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying to Brooke. Yeah, free workout. It's great.
Yeah.
Come springtime. And even Brooke was saying there, like, over the last year or so working outside, he felt like he was getting, like, you know, fit and strong. And that is a different kind of fitness, like actual working fitness.
Old man strength. That's what I call it. It's like you look at him and he's like, you know, he's got a little bit of a belly, your granda. Like, you know, his arms aren't that big. He's got skinny legs. And he's just over here, like, farmer walk deadlifting, like 200 kilos. You're like, damn, boy.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, that's a real strength. But then equally on the other side of that, it's funny, you know, Brooke mentioned that over the winter time, you know, he like sort of softened up and, you know, I don't know, assuming like started eating the same amount probably, but less active over the winter time. And it really like just in that instance made me feel like, oh, you know, without realizing it or to whatever degree there's consciousness of it, like that's really in tune with nature. You know, like the animals do fatten up in nature over the winter time to keep the cold out, and Like, that's just a really normal thing.
Have you ever had, like, really low body fat? Like, have you ever at some point in your journey decided, I'm going to get shredded?
Yeah.
Do you remember how that felt?
Also that, but I've also been, like, just really skinny too. Like, when...
It's uncomfortable.
It's not good.
It's not pleasant.
And you're always cold.
It's freezing cold.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've never been a goddess. But, you know, there's people that I know that are, like... You're talking, like, men's health.
Uh-huh.
Sort of, like... beyond shredded, and they're like, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
Or I've heard, you know, interviews from, like, you know, the Marvel cast, say, where they're like, I couldn't wait to, like, bring my body fat up by 5% again, because it's just not a nice way to live.
Yeah.
I guess that's the ideal that we fantasize.
Yeah.
And idealize, you know. It's so strange.
I suppose whenever, I don't know, like, there's probably a lot of different things to that, but probably the main one is that we're shown that as the ideal, and it's, like, held up in our movies and, like, magazines and social media and stuff as an ideal. And isn't it funny, too, like, how over time the ideal changes as well? So, yeah. Like, there isn't necessarily... It's nothing actually to do, really, with peak health.
Yeah. Do you know what's crazy, though? Like, and I probably only thought about this in this moment as you said it. I've never met anyone that looks like the magazine cover. I know that's a bit of, like, an old school meme now, because, I mean, who the heck even looks at magazines? Or, like, okay, the Instagram influencer.
Sure.
Like, I have met a lot of people in my life.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've met an uncommon amount of people in an uncommon amount of places, and not one of those people has looked like that ideal. Like, it's so uncommon. Like, the amount of people in the world that look like that on a percentage level, you're talking, like, not point not.
Yeah, you're right.
Not,
actually.
Probably, you know what I mean? But it's everywhere. Like, you think that's the norm?
Yeah, right enough. Actually, that's a really, really good take. Like, the disparity between the amount of people we see that look like that on our screens and the amount of people like that who actually exist in the world. Like, that's way out of kilter.
But it's kind of back to, like, the farmer or the granda. Because, like, if you even watch the Olympics, people are in good shape, but they're not in that type of good shape.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't all have 10 packs.
Yeah.
They don't all, you know what I mean? Like, some of them look like regular people walking down the street.
Yeah.
And I love powerlifters, because powerlifters are, like, the most unassuming looking people in the world. Like, they look like you or me. Like, often, like, relatively, like, ectomorphy kind of folks. And they're going and they're lifting the most outrageous, like, weights. So, like, their strength is not correlated to their muscle. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting kind of idea as well. Or even if you look at some, like, look at horrible situations. Look at, like throughout history, like, slave labor.
Mm-hmm.
Even in, like, situations where people weren't getting enough food. And they're unbelievably strong. You know, they are physically capable. Like, they could outwork all of us, even though they look puny and tiny and skinny and not strong at all. It's just, there's a disparity between, you know, the visual and the reality, even in the physicality. I'm trying to be Eminem over here.
I think one of the best examples of that are climbers, like, how insanely strong they are. And, like, they just look like, I mean, they look skinny, I suppose, so they can't afford to carry a lot of extra, like, body fat. But it's probably also they can't afford to carry extra, like, muscle mass that isn't, you know, doing something.
Yeah, the climber doesn't need the huge tree trunk legs.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, your legs are important in climbing, but you don't need that extra mass.
Yeah, like, I'm talking about, like, unassumingly strong, like, climbers are just insane. You know, like, are they, like, operating, and endurance as well.
Yeah. And, like, you know, this is me being conscious of my own biases here. I'll just say it, you know, like, I've never felt more emasculated than, like, climbing with female professional climbers. You know what I mean? Who you look at and they're smaller than you. There's no veins popping out of their forearms. And they're over here doing, like, one finger pull-ups. And you're like, my goodness, that is impressive.
Sometimes even yogis as well, like, not necessarily always renowned as, like, the most physically strong people, but, like, the ratio of strength to body weight, like, in some of the postures that some yogis can hold, it's, like, crazy. Not even just like what came to my mind there initially when you were saying about like female climbers and stuff was, you know, female yogis who can hold these amazing postures. But then my mind moved on to like the yogis of India and the surrounding region, like skinny looking dudes.
Real skinny. I've seen them in Nepal, literally inside of the street, they're skin and bone.
Yeah.
And they're doing like handstand push-ups.
Yeah.
I'm like, why do you look like you're starving, but you're a calisthenic god? Like, right. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating thing. And I think with the whole like body image thing and the thing we hold up as the ideal, it's normally associated with like, well, that's just like the peak of performance and like health and like the most shining example of like a vibrant, vivacious person. But it's not necessarily that. That's not right.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of that, like, okay, so I'm reading a book at the minute called Exercised. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's like a play on the word exercise and like exercising a demon.
Yeah.
And it's all about hunter-gatherers and the way that they move and exercise. And his big point is that we never evolutionarily evolved to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. And at the core of that, what he's saying is physical activity was always linked to some sort of a survival purpose. Mm. Like if you go and you tell a hunter-gatherer somewhere in the world today that you're going to go for a run for the crack, they will laugh at your face and they'll be horrified. They're like, why would you waste calories like that? Like, physical activity is for one thing, to get food to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And because of the way, you know, modern society has changed and evolved and the work that we do, we have to artificially go out of our way to physically use our bodies. And then we ask, like, why is it so hard to go to the gym? And it's because back in the day, like, you were forced to move. Yeah. You had no option. You couldn't avoid it. Whereas this is a total add-on bonus thing that we have to use our willpower to get involved in.
Think about even talking to a hunter-gatherer or, like, just talk to anyone. Like, I don't know how long gyms have been like a normal thing, but like, let's say go back like 60-70 years or whatever and say, you know, like you go back in time and speak to that person and tell them, like, in my recreational time I go into this big building with all these heavy things and lift them up and set them down.
Bro, one step further, I pay money to do that.
Yeah, right.
I sacrifice bread on my table to go and pick up heavy objects recreationally.
Right.
It's so inverted.
Yeah. But then, like you said, such is our society now that we have to do that.
Yeah.
Because it's just not available to us.
Shout out to the train.
Chugga chugga.
It's surprisingly closer. Like, again, I'm shocked that it's there.
Yeah, it actually reminds me of this really amazing experience having a few friends over from different places, a friend over from the Netherlands and a couple of friends over from America. And it being probably, must have been like autumn sort of time, because I remember it not being too cold, but it was dark early enough and having a walk through the country park and it was dead silent, like no one else around. And the train going across the big bridge down in Crawfordsburn, familiar with it, the big stone bridge. And these like railway fences on either side of the top of it, which are like cross-hatched, if you can imagine.
Yeah.
And just in the silence of the forest, then this big like train noise that obviously the listener will have just heard there on the microphone, but the lights like going through the cross hatch, like, and it was going over the tracks. It was stunning. Like, it was such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And not something that you would ordinarily think of as a beautiful thing, just like a train passing by, but just in that context of the light and the movement and the silence all around.
It's so strange whenever like the artificial merges with the natural to create something beautiful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's very, very, very strange. Because, you know, we kind of have that bend where it's like, no, only natural is best. You know? It's like, if it's not a living organism, like, I don't have time for it.
There's something interesting in that as well. like,
but then this, so sorry, this is the thing. My friend always, like, often will pick up an object, like, say, a phone,
yeah,
or like a saucepan, or a microchip, and he'll stand and he'll hold it up dramatically and have dramatic pauses for effect. And he'll turn around and he'll say, isn't it crazy that this thing was made with stuff on the earth?
Yeah.
Everything that we know has come from the earth in some shape or form. Like, how do you go from this pile of wood chips
yeah,
to an iPhone 17?
That's where I was kind of going with that. Like, not even just the fact that it's, like, made out of... Everything's made out of real things, but also made by us, and we are a part of nature as well. Yep. So it's made by nature, of nature, even the most... I guess it's just more processed than... Maybe there's an idea that the more processes, or the more processed something is, the less beautiful it becomes, but I don't know if that's necessarily true.
You know, well, gold's highly processed. Yeah. Diamonds are highly processed. You know,
yeah,
there's kind of natural examples of process as well.
And even you think of, like, bees creating, like, a hive and honey and stuff, like, that's, like, a whole process, and they're, like, working to make something.
Yeah.
I guess it is... Well, is it more simple? I don't...
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's interesting, like, in some ways, like, what you described, that's at the core of the Hebrew Genesis story.
Hmm.
So, like, God created the heavens and the earth, and he created man to be co-creators on earth. So, like, you know, you've heard the phrase, like, that humans in the Hebrew tradition were created in the image of God. And, like, when you boil that down, what that means is, like, they have the creator inside of them. They have the urge, the desire, and the ability to create. And it's different than the bees. Like, the ability to take raw material and turn it into something outrageous. Nature does it, for sure.
Yeah.
But they're not going on making, like, iPhones. Do you know what I mean? It's just on a slightly different level. I mean, maybe I've never looked inside a bee's pocket, in fairness.
Yeah. But isn't that funny, too? Because I 100% agree with you. Like, that line about man being made in God's image. Like, humans have come to be with the capacity to make other things come to be. And isn't it funny how that's been written down and translated over the years in such a way that it's taken that, oh, God must look like a human being up on a cloud.
Yeah.
Like, he's a man on a cloud.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny, like, how, like, reduced something so beautiful becomes to, like, this really, really simple idea that people... And not that there's anything necessarily wrong with a really simple idea, and it might be okay to communicate some deeper thing on a really shallow level.
Yeah.
But then somebody will take that really simple idea and, like, use it as a battleground to die on.
I mean, not to get too... I mean, I was going to say not to get too esoteric, I guess that's the point of the show. But what you've just described there is us making God in our image.
Yeah.
You know, it's the inversion of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Farming.
Yeah. Like, back to the garden. Like, spoiler alert, like, I chatted to Brooke yesterday. So he was in the studio in my turf, in my artificially beautiful world, the digital metaverse that is, you know, the studio with the artificial lighting and everything. And here we are today, outside in the sun, lying on a pile of wood chips, about to go and, I don't know, whatever work Brooke has for us. But I'm sure you think about this all the time. Like, I've been given an opportunity and I've been given gifts that work really well for something like podcasting. And I've put in a lot of work to develop that craft and build a business, yada, 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 yada. I have a privilege. I have a platform. I am in a position of influence, and with that comes responsibility. I would be lying to you if I sometimes fantasize, if I didn't say that often I fantasize about throwing it all away and becoming a farmer or becoming a postman, like something where I don't have to own a laptop, where I don't have to have an email account, where I don't have to do taxes and sit on my ass for many, many hours a week, and instead live outside, do a lot of physical activity, be forced to do a lot of physical activity. And I question and I ask myself all the time, like, how would your life change if you did that? And, you know, part of that is the human nature of, like, the grass is always greener. Because you chat to Brooke, I'm sure he's like, dude, being a farmer is hella hard. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, we, you know, there is that always wanting what we don't have. But I think, like, deeper than that layer, there is a reality that we are living in a system that the human body is not designed for, and you feel the weight and the burden of that.
Yeah, that's back to this thing that I feel really strongly about. Like, if you speak to a 21st century person and they haven't experienced some form of anxiety or depression,
yeah,
like, how have you not?
Yeah,
because, like, the world that you're born into, you don't fit as a human. Like, we don't fit 21st century living, and that's where it comes back to, like, having to go to the gym, having to go into the sea, like, making yourself do these weird things to put yourself more back into alignment with the world that we've evolved for, rather than the world that we're living in that we have not evolved to deal with.
And, like, why I'm so excited about this today and about Baruch's business and what he's doing is because, like, in my life, there are so many layers and obstacles that remove me from this. So what I mean is, like, let's paint a highly romanticized picture where it's like, let's say we live on this piece of land. We live in a little shelter. Maybe it's a log cabin. Maybe it's a hut. Okay. We don't have a mortgage. I don't have to go out and get gold to pay a bank to allow me to live somewhere, or pay a landlord to let me live somewhere. I don't need to have money to buy a car so I can drive to Tesco's to go and buy food from Egypt that has been processed and planted and packaged up and marketed to me and campaigned. I get outside of my tent. I walk into the land and I work the land to get food. Because, you know, everything we do, you and I, outside of the purpose and the mission behind it, is to give us money to not die. Whereas you can cut the whole process and just go straight to the not dying bit and the food. Like, you just, like, that's what hunter-gatherers do. They wake up and they get the enough food and resources that they can continue living another day. And we're so, so far removed from that, my dude. Like, we are, like, that sounds like a different planet, because it is.
It reminds me of this meme I saw online. It was, like, a really crudely drawn orangutan and, like, a person. And the person was like, LOL, look at the monkey. And the orangutan was like, LOL, you're the only animal that pays to live. So basically your entire point, like, been a little meme.
Oh my goodness.
Right? It's so bizarre.
I feel like getting that tattooed across my back.
That, like, crudely drawn orangutan. Oh, man. Yeah. So you're totally right. And also, as well, just the realization for me in that is, like, for most of my life, and 100% whenever I was, like, a child and a teenager, like, how far was that from my awareness? Like, do you know that, like, humans could just, like, put seeds in the ground, or, like, go and kill an animal if, you know, to get animal
go
protein
and pick
or
pick a walnut off a tree.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, you could just do that to live instead of doing all this other ridiculously contrived stuff. But then, can you? I mean, you'd have to. It's, you know, like, the systems that are in place in this moment are so crazy, like the governments that are in place that require you to be a cog in that machine and are very resistant to anything that jams up the machine.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, like this is what my brain thinks about every single waking moment. Like, and I could go into, like, some huge massive. To bypass all of that, what I will say before we get into the garden is, where I'm currently at is, yes, you could do some crazy radical, like,
you could take the Matrix pill and just step out of the Matrix. Mm-hmm. And you could go and do something radical and walk away from... You could check out of society, right? Or you could slowly start to incorporate little bits into your modern life, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm not saying I never... Like, there's a high chance I am highly susceptible to, like, joining a wee cult or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like a little community, like a commune where, like, you just work the land and you do your thing, right? And I'm not... I'm by no means am I being ungrateful for some of the incredible things we have, like medicine and, you know... Because the system also takes care of you.
Yeah.
Like, in an unbelievable way. And I'm a weak, unskilled labourer. Like, if I went and started living off the land, I'd probably be dead in a month. Mm. You know what I mean? But what can we do? And this is why I love what Baruch's doing. We can do something small. His favourite quote that we talked about in the interview yesterday was, if you think you're too small to make a difference, you've never spent a night in a tent with a mosquito.
So good.
And he talks about him being a farmer, a little tiny, organic, no-dig vegetable farmer in a big agricultural farming system where they've got huge tractors and acres and acres and acres and acres and acres. But like, what he's doing matters. And what he's doing is showing us that the little tiny piece of land that's inside your influence, you can work, you can deploy, you can be a good curator and steward over, and you can work with nature in your 1 meter by 1 meter concrete block in your 2 up 2 down in Belfast. Mm-hmm. You can grow stuff. There's ways to do it. You literally can introduce so much wildlife into your home, and as a result you can get food
mm-hmm.
from a seed
yeah.
that you don't have to pay for. And there's so much fear and anxiety and rising costs and all this sort of stuff. And again, the hunter-gatherer has no bills to pay. So I think, like, by... Even if it's something simple, like, look, maybe if I follow Baruch's methods, I'll not have to buy salad this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will have reduced my grocery bills slightly. And maybe year two, maybe I never need to buy tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Maybe year three, I figure out how to grow stuff that I can preserve throughout the winter so that it's not just a few months out of the year, but it's maybe 6 months out of the year. And I think you can start to move that needle slightly towards a more sustainable place. And I think it's like the domino effect. You knock over that one domino and who knows where it's going to take you.
Yeah, that like middle way that we've talked about often.
The middle way, yeah. Bro!
And there's a bigger philosophical thing in there as well, like to really reduce it down, like not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Like yeah. there are so many good things about modern society and culture, and like whenever people do try to go to the extreme of like completely going off to live on the woods on their own and being a hermit, it never ends. It never ends up well. And then even the hero's journey thing, to put this kind of in a nutshell as well, is like it's the individual or the hero that like saves the father or revivifies the society that they're born from.
Yeah.
And like if you accept what is now society and like do your little bit to help improve that, if everyone does that, you know, that's honoring the father, the thing that brought you to this point.
Yeah.
But also, you know, adding to that. And
yeah, I know I talk about the Bible way too much on our shows. Incoming train.
Chugga, 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 chugga.
There's a really interesting, I think it's like one of Jesus's last words. I think it's like the last prayer he prays for his disciples. And he says this really, really interesting thing where he's like praying to God, the Father. And he's like, my prayer isn't that you take them out of the world, but that you show them how to live in the world. And there's a, you know, the way that gets paraphrased is like, we are called to be in the world, but not off the world. So there is the option where you can just check out and run away. I mean, most of the times, like, running away from your problems is a race you can never win. So you run away to Rwanda or New York, you leave Northern Ireland, and you're like, damn it, I'm still the same person. And, you know, all the stuff that you were blaming other people for and running away from, it was just you. And so, you know, you got to do the work. Like, yeah. The hero's, you can't skip the hero's journey. Yeah. Like, and if you do, you'll be miserable. You know, you'll be in the shower your whole life, like complaining about all those things you always have been complaining about. But like, you know, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure that you seek. Like, how many times have we talked about that? And you have, like, sometimes I think the only way through all of this is like straight through it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't skip it. You just have to go like deep into it, and it's going to be painful, and there's going to be mistakes, and you're going to make a lot of shortcomings along the way. But like, what else can you do?
Guess that's going to be us right now. Painful, make some mistakes in the garden. But we're just going to do it.
Dude, I'm excited. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Let's go see our taskmaster, Brooke.
Yeah. Brooke, do you mind if I ask you just one question?
Yeah, sure.
I want to know, how do you get people to come and work on your business for free?
I don't know. Give them free salad, maybe. Was that no good? Yeah.
Dude, it worked. Tell us about this lunch, because it's legendary.
Oh, so good that like we had the opportunity to like be shown around and eat the things that, you know, we were like working with today. Like, yeah. The novel experience of not just going into Tesco and, you know, meal deal, £3.
Yeah. Yeah, Brooke's like, hey, it's lunchtime. I'm like, okay, he brought some lunch. And then he just gets like a bucket and starts like picking salads. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is heaven.
Yeah.
So cool. But it's strange, like, why do you think people like me and Scott come to volunteer? To yeah. work for you for free. Because yeah, like yeah. no one would come to my business and say, oh, Matthew, bro, I would love to do your taxes for you.
Or yeah, you name like
I wish somebody say that to me. Yeah. Well. Everybody wants to do the gardening. I think it just is, it just gets you closer to nature, and just there's that that soothing part of gardening when you work with the soil, when you're just focused in that point. It's just you just connect to yourself and yeah. just love it. Yeah, anybody tries it, just loves it. And that's how I got into it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Will you be back, Scott?
Definitely. And to find out more, listen to the full episode with Brooke and Matt.
Yeah, so that was my question to you guys. So are you coming back again then?
Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah, I'd like to bring Holly, my girlfriend, up sometime. That'll I think she'd nice. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
It'd be fun.
I mean, a question Scott and I had whenever we were too busy talking and not working.
Yeah, I know.
Was, like... Do schools come here?
Not yet. Yet,
because we were saying like, wow. Yeah. Like, I mean, you'd have to really think about how you did it, but like, it would be awesome to come here and like, this is where food is grown. This is how it's grown.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
Yes. No, at the moment, I am teaching at West Winds Primary School.
Oh, sweet.
Just to do like a gardening lesson, but I plan to bring them here and show them around, and also if there are other schools, I think it'd be nice to have.
Yeah.
To inspire little people.
Yeah, because, I mean, like...
The next farmers.
Yeah, like we said in the last podcast, you know, like, unless you're in this world, you know nothing. Like, you're so ignorant. Like, even today I was walking around, I was like, whoa, I didn't realize that's what broccoli looked like. And you're like, Matthew, that's kale.
That's kale flowering.
Yeah, I know. But I remember chatting like, to a dairy person on the show one time. Where
London Dairy, actually.
Oh dear. And where we get our milk from, like locally. And they do a lot of school tours. And they said that a teacher came to them, like a primary school teacher, and they were looking at the cows. They were like, oh, this is really cool. So, like, which cows are the blue milk? And the guy was like, what? He goes, yeah, like it's a different cow for like the blue milk, the green milk, and the red milk, right?
No way.
This is the teacher.
The teacher.
But like, you can't judge that because I mean.
How would you know?
How would you know? Or I mean, I love the kids. The kids are like, where's the brown cows? The guy's like, what do you mean? Well, the ones that make a chocolate milk. But it's crazy because we're so disconnected from the process of how, the fact that now, like, I mean, there is quite a lot of life here. You know, we spent like an hour shoveling compost onto the ground.
Yeah.
I've never thought that somebody needs to do that in order for me to have anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, like, it's hard to lose the hard work side of it. You know, it can be like novel to do this, but there is a lot of work involved in it. It's just not, it's a fun one. I don't know why it's fun. I don't know why I love it and I come back to it, but it's just is hard work. Yeah. It's a hard work.
Yeah.
And as the season goes through, like the type of work differs, and it gives you a lot of variety. So you're not going to be shifting compost like all the time for you guys to come back as well. There's more work. There's harvest. There's planting and there's sowing. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this: we were talking a lot in our intro before we came here about exercise.
Yeah.
And how, like, you know, if you're following a natural pattern, your body changes throughout the year.
Yeah.
What point of the year are you the strongest?
I don't know.
Based on the
it
work?
It should not now, because now I'm working on my Christmas fat, isn't it? So maybe in a month's time, maybe that would be the strongest. You know, there is last year I was distracted by thinking, I was running first. I ran in January, and I thought, oh, garden work is coming, so I don't need to exercise. And then my last run was in December. And then it's like, but in between, there's harvest time. You think you're doing physical work, but not. But you're running around and picking stuff.
Yeah.
But the physical work would eliminate once you finish all the soil moving and things. And it's really, it can distract you sometimes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The strongest maybe May time.
when you get the photo shoot for No Dig magazine.
No Dig.
Awesome, dude. Well, thank you for your time today. Thank you for letting us come and work for free. Yeah, I appreciate it.
I'll wait for your invoice.
So, bro, what do you think?
Well, I feel well fed. That was a nice lunch.
Oh, such a good lunch.
Yeah.
I really want that salad every day.
But would it taste as delicious if you hadn't been doing the work beforehand?
Absolutely not.
No.
If I think about the best meal of my life, it actually was after my Gold Duke of Ed. And all the other meals in top five are after extreme exertion and being away from certain types of food for a long period of time.
Oh, that reminds me of, for sure, the best thing I've ever eaten
right?
in my life. It's one of those things that is completely situational, like we're just talking about, though. It was at the end of my second 60-day juice fast.
Oh, my goodness.
So, like, the second time in my life I'd gone 2 months without food and had built the fast up to end on midnight of New Year's Eve.
That sounds dangerous.
Yeah. To be fair, wrong time of year to do a really long fast. So lots of lessons learned of that in hindsight. But as the clock struck 12,
Christmas Day, you're like slurping your Brussels sprout juice.
Oh, it wasn't good.
Grim.
Yeah. But you know what? Lots of lessons taken out of that in hindsight. That was... I had certain expectations of how that fast was going to go. Didn't meet all my expectations, but the end of it was glorious. And
dude, how are you breaking that fast?
So just like the most basic homemade vegetable soup.
Mm.
And it was so delicious.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, like the most unbelievable. I don't even remember like the end of the first time I did one of those fast being that good, but I'll always remember that soup.
so good, man. Something that really struck me shoveling there, I mean, like, I want to be perfectly clear, like, we definitely did not do a lot of work there. You know, like, this isn't like going and doing like 12 hours like on the ranch. Like, you know, it was very, very pleasant, very enjoyable physical work, but for a very short period of time. And I kind of had the sense that, like, okay, so two moments. The first one was whenever we were shoveling the second pile. So what we were doing was we were taking piles of mushroom spent that's being used as compost and laying it down on the grounds to create beds where Baruch's going to plant. And when we got to the second one and we got real quiet, remember?
Yeah.
Like, I actually, and at a few points, like, we were like perfectly in sync. Like, we were, like, shoveling at the same time. And I was like, dude, it's so nice to hang out with somebody and not say something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, like, a real mark of, like, friendship or comfort or... it just hits different, you know? And we were shoveling away and then I got thinking about some stuff. And it just hit me. Like, with every single shovel that I was putting in that wheelbarrow, moving over and putting it down and raking it on the ground, I was like, I am playing
I'm collaborating with nature and with Baruch to feed somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all looking for purpose and meaning in our work. I'm not sure if you can get higher than that. Mm. You know, like, I'm shoveling this. You know, it's backbreaking work. But, like, I had a picture in my head of, like, a family sitting down and, like, eating a salad. Yeah. That is a result of all the things that go into that salad getting on that plate. But, like, you are playing, like, a small little, like, circle of life moment in that. Do you know what I mean?
I think you're really onto something there. Like, people who are in the lines of work that we are in these lines of work generally because they've been on some sort of bizarre journey where they're healing something and like feeling the need to share some of the thing that they've been through. And while that's like a really noble thing, I think the person who's fully healed isn't out there trying to like do the thing. They're probably just like farming.
Yeah.
And like just living like a basic,
totally
basic life and like serving in that real simple way of like not needing one bit of recognition from it, not needing to speak about it, just shoveling dirt and putting salad on the table.
I know. And you know, here's us doing like 1 hour of hard work and it's like we're gonna create a whole podcast around it. Do you know what I mean? It's like yeah. It's like put it up in your Instagram stories and like, oh everybody, hi, I'm just doing lots of hard work right now. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're like, dude, this is so hilarious. The other thing that popped out to me kind of on that note was, so I kind of had that, followed that same vision through that I was saying, you know, oh, the shovel goes to the ground and the seed goes in the ground and Baruch waters the ground and takes care of it and weeds and the salad leaf grows and, you know, it gets harvested and the family comes and picks it up. They go, they prepare the meal, they put it on the table and then the kid doesn't eat it.
Oh, yeah.
And the food goes to waste. What a loss of life. Mm-hmm. You know, what a loss of energy. What a loss of effort. Mm-hmm. From all of those contributors, from the guy that's shoveled one thing to, you know, the earthworm that spent 3 weeks like gnawing its way through that one little kind of like square meter. Do you know what I mean? But I never think about that whenever I'm chucking something in my bin at home. Because I go to Tesco and I pick it up and I throw it in my basket and then that's it. You know? Yeah. You're totally disconnected from, like, I'm growing stuff this year in the garden. I guarantee you, like, I will be making sure that I try not to waste anything because of the effort that's gone into creating it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you're absolutely right that it's so much easier to just disregard something if you feel like, like, because if everything's kind of based around story, like the story you have in your head around the thing you pick up from Tesco is just like, well, that's just the thing I pick up from Tesco. And like the story doesn't go far enough.
It's disposable. It's throwaway.
Yeah.
It's cheap.
And whereas like the story you have around the thing that you've like dug and like cared for in the garden, like your story massively affects it. Could be like very similar piece of food, but the story you create around it massively affects how you interact with it.
Bro, and this is taking me back to like what we were saying under that tree over there. Think about something like a phone. Think about how much process is involved in creating that. And then for like, you know, at the end of the iPhone cycle, whenever that just gets thrown away.
Yeah.
Even if it works. But even if it's finished. Mm-hmm. You know, that gets thrown away. It's like, dude, how much life are you closing the loop on there?
Yeah. Although, like, with food, I mean, one thing that sort of popped into my mind there, even the thing that gets uneaten, if it goes into, like, the food waste bin and, like, goes back, like, returns to the cycle in some sense.
Yeah, true.
There's, like, that idea that energy cannot really be created or destroyed. It just moves from one form into the other. And
yeah.
So where does that sit with things like an iPhone in a, like a tip, you know, like a just a waste pile that, like, eventually does it just, is that the long game of thousands of years for it to like decompose or whatever happens to it? And
yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing interesting things. I know very little about this, so I don't want to speak too much about it, you know, of some of the certain kind of like precious metals that are involved in making iPhones and how
they are like really limited and it's a scarce resource. And so mm-hmm. what will happen when that runs out? Now, I know there is from a lot of friends, there's a lot of like even slave labor implications in a lot of that sort of resource as well. But yeah, like with the food, it's at the very least, let's make sure we put it in the brown bin.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, you can start a compost pile at home, which is really, really, really easy. My council actually gave me one for free. So I phoned them up. I was like, hi, I heard you're giving away free compost bins. They're like, yeah, yeah, when do you want it delivered? I was like, sweet. And it's just like a big, it's just a big tub that you put in your garden and you just throw your stuff into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it is amazing to think that in theory, this time next year, I can just put, I can grow things from that compost.
Yeah.
From my own food waste. And that's kind of what I mean. Like there's smaller ways for us. We can take small steps to giant living. It's like, I don't know. I just made that up there now. Like, wow, that's kind of cool.
That's and very
someone,
wise.
Someone write that down. That's God's tagline for anyone who isn't tracking. You know, but that's the thing. It's not that you have to immediately sell up and leave society and do this big thing. It's like you can start taking those small steps that will be meaningful to you.
Yeah. Really, just talking about like composting and doing your own thing, it's actually made me think about my dad. And like he in slightly younger years like really loved being in the garden and like taking care of the garden in the house that like I probably spent most of my childhood in. And like I never really got it when I was growing up.
Sure.
And you know, like, oh, that goes in the compost. I could tell that he like cared about the compost and yeah. the compost bin, and like thinking like that's so weird.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, yeah, dad,
yeah,
like, he got something that I didn't get then. Yeah. And now like you are a father and you're that dad who cares about the compost.
Yeah. Like I was joking with Baruch, like, you know, I've been doing a lot of like I have like backbreaking work with a little piece of land at the back of our house that's like a building site, and putting in like a serious amount of hours that I haven't had to work out because it's been so intense. And you know, I'll have like a pile of stuff at the top of this slope, and my like, you know, wee daughter will come along and she'll just like start throwing it back down the ramp, like back down the slope, and I'm like, no, what are you doing? You don't understand. And then I'm like, oh, this is the start of it, isn't it?
I think it's really cool that Brooke has his kids involved at the farm as well. And I think he was saying that his eldest was like giving people tours around.
So cool.
Around the farm. And yeah, like when you're growing up and seeing that stuff, I wonder, will they have like a deeper appreciation of it, or will they be like me and, you know, like, why does dad care about this?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. Why do you think so many old people get in the garden? Why is it a grey-haired sport in Northern Ireland?
I feel like, I'm not sure if it is through the passage of time and life experiences that every individual does kind of find their way back to like real things. You know, like you go out and you try and find meaning in like all this external big stuff, and then probably by the end stages of life, the things that are meaningful to most older people are like time with their grandkids, going for a walk somewhere nice, or like spending time in the garden.
Do you think like whenever our peer group are 80, they'll still be sitting on the sofa scrolling through TikTok?
That's a really good question.
Do you know what I mean? Like, are
whatever the equivalent?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Like, are we on a path of altering, like the granny and granda stereotype?
I definitely think there has been an enormous shift in human beings. I think that I'm at like the real, like basically I'm around the start of millennials coming to be a thing. And I think from that point, there's a massive shift. I think like the older people from like who are in their maybe like early 30s now are going to be somehow different. I'm not sure how exactly that will manifest, but one thing that I do feel maybe the case is that whenever you look at older people now, they all kind of fit a certain like shape, like they all wear very similar clothes.
That's what I mean. There's a type. An archetype.
But I don't so I think the older person from here on out, you know, might have stepped a little bit more into their individuality.
Uh-huh.
But I don't believe the principle will change of older people either finding their way to the meaningful, simple things or becoming really bitter. And like, I think maybe we talked about that one time before, like older people like end up one way or the other, like real bitter, nasty old shit. Or I was really choosing which swear word to go for there. Or like they're just the sweetest, kindliest, like older people, you know. And that is amazing because life's fucking hard, and if you get all the way to that point and you haven't let it turn you bitter, like you're a special being.
Yeah. What's that Latin phrase? And it's like, don't let the bastards grind you down.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Those people who managed to live by that. Yeah. And really, I think about like all the people that I love the most in my life are people who have a story that would absolutely break your heart and are still open and kind and have an open heart and like didn't put up the walls and barriers.
They're in the game, bro. They're still in the arena. Even after all those years, they're still fighting, you know?
Yeah.
And that's encouraging. I tell you one thing that puts me off gardening. Delayed gratification.
Yeah, right.
And like I like prize myself on being someone who's like a powerlifter in this area. That's yeah. That's what I think about. I'm like, yeah, I delayed gratification. Like, I got that sorted.
Yeah.
But it hits me because I'm like, you know, I'm doing work now that I'm only going to start to see the benefit of next year.
Yeah.
I'm like, I said something the other day, oh, I really want to start growing walnuts in my garden after that day with Ryan, because Ryan was talking about his love for walnuts. Yeah, yeah. And I was at someone's house and they showed me their walnut tree. They're like, yeah, it's amazing. We honestly, we harvested like 3 kilos of walnuts from this. And I was like, that's amazing. I was like, you know, how long ago did you plant that tree? And then they told me, and I was like, okay, look, like, how many years did it take for it to start producing fruit? And they're like, yeah, only 5 years. And immediately in my head, I was like, I'm never planting a walnut tree. There's no way in hell I'm planting a walnut tree. Like, 5 years? Like, I might be in that house in 5 years. Like, I'm not wasting the money. I'm not wasting the effort. I'm wasting the time. And we walk into the walled garden today.
Mm-hmm.
And right at the front, there's these two incredible ancient pear trees
mm-hmm.
that look like the tree equivalent of Rafiki in The Lion King. It just looks wise.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and I'm looking at that, and there was a part of me, like when we were sitting having our lunch beside that tree, I was like, what kind of a person plants a tree like that?
And takes the time to
nurture it
and train it. And
yeah.
I mean, there's a really like great quote that I wanted to look up as we were talking there. Blessed are old people who plant trees knowing they shall never sit in the shade of their foliage.
Mm.
How wise is that? Like that's blessed are those people who do that.
Wow.
You know, like the person who planted that tree's probably come and gone, and you know,
and maybe never even got to see the fruit.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. Like we, and this is back to like individualism of the West and millennials, like, you know, if you look at it from a critical lens, because all you think about is your life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think about what happens after you, because you're like, oh, who cares? Who cares mm-hmm. what's after me? Because I'll be gone. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I feel like perhaps because we were more connected to the rhythm of nature, humans, or at least good humans, would have been a lot more forward thinking. And there are cultures around the world where they're like, it's not even about my generation, it's about 3 generations from now.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, this is where like Asia does a very scary job. Like, what is it, the current president of China was asked about this is deep from within my skull, so give me grace here if the details aren't 100%. Someone asked him, do you think the French Revolution was a success or not? Do you know this?
No.
Do you know what he said?
No.
He said it's too early to tell.
Whoa, that is so crazy.
Bro!
That's it. Imagine to like be have the wisdom to drop that straight. Like that's Like, how much is that in you to be able to, like, just throw that back out? Like, that's so cool.
But that's, like, you know, I mean, people talk a lot about the East versus the West for lots of different reasons. But there's just a very clear mindset difference. I'm just like, dude, those people are built differently. Like, that is some serious, like, generational passed on wisdom versus, like, quickly, let's do this short-term policy to, like, make the next 2 years fine.
Yeah.
And not think about, like, even, like, what's this going to be like in 10 years? Never mind. What's this going to be like in three generations?
You know, I wonder if there's something, again, in this, in, like, the middle way. Because, like, on one extreme, like, you know, if you're living now for the generations, like, hundreds and hundreds of years down the line, or whether you're doing something because it has to matter in the next year, you know, maybe there is something in between that and, like, in the marriage of Eastern and Western philosophy. It's hot, you know, like, these different schools of thought have brought up, like, really different cultures. And another thing that makes me think of is kind of, like, globalism, and it generally is, like, Western culture, like, pervading in around the rest of the world.
Yeah, yeah. And it's teenagers in Rwanda watching 50 Cent videos.
Yeah, and wanting to go to Starbucks, and, you know, that's, like, creeping around the world. And you see that there's certain cultures that, like, resist that as if it's the devil. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's easy to look at that and be like, oh, those people are really backwards. Are they?
Yeah. Or are they, like, trying to survive the virus that's spreading through the planet?
Yeah. And, like, I'm asking that question completely openly, not with a point.
A rhetorical.
Yeah. Like, I, you know, who am I to say one way or the other?
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe there should be a greater appreciation of the people who are, like, and again, not my point of view, but, like, America is the devil, and, like, capitalism in the Western world is, like, corrupting our children. And, you know, maybe that's just a really extreme point of view, but, like, there's probably a grain of truth in that.
Yeah, 100%. And again, like, in all of this, there is a reaction in me that is paralyzed, where it's like, Even the thought of a walnut tree is paralyzing. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, oh, like, what's the point? Or, like, how, like, why should I do that? And there's a quote I love, and it's like, the two best times to plant an oak tree, the first one is 10 years ago, and the second one is right now.
Oh, that's really good.
Not nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good one. There's something also in this as well of, like, having different philosophies about approach to your actions and whether it's, like, immediate return or, like, a long-term thing. But there's maybe also something in that the person who is just connected to what they're doing on a regular basis and, like, following their intuition and stuff, they're not necessarily needing to get up into their head enough to think about, like, oh, I need, like, contrive life to the point where they are thinking about that. If, like, their feeling is like, oh, walnut tree there would be nice, and, like, you know, maybe someday that'll provide for it, they're not thinking about it too much.
Yeah. I do also think on a fundamental level it comes back to, like, shoveling the compost.
Yeah,
because, like, we did get immediate gratification in that moment.
Yeah.
Like, the we find meaning in the process, and that was enjoyable. And that was our dopamine hit. Yeah. And I bet you, like, I guarantee you, if I went and I got a little walnut tree sapling and I planted it in my garden, I can visualize in my head me patting the soil down around it and standing up and looking at it and being like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And even that process, like, as it's getting bigger, like, yeah, you're right. There's, like, fun. There's definitely gratification to be had along the way.
And, like, you know, Huberman's got a great episode and, like, about dopamine, and the summary of it basically is how you win at life. This is a gross oversimplification, but I don't want to regurgitate 3 hours or open a can of worms. He's just like, look, how you win at life and the dopamine gain is you figure out a way to get your pleasure from enjoying the process rather than the result of that. Or in other words, get your pleasure from the labor rather than the fruit.
Mm.
And that's cool.
Yeah. And I feel like that's not like a really widely shared message, or you know, like it, this like goal oriented, I don't know, kind of thing that's put out there of success being like when you have the money or something like
that. Dude, I'll drop one more little bit, okay? Just to fill this out. He talked about studies that show that people who reward themselves for going for a run, say with a sliced pizza or a chocolate bar, just to keep it nice and stereotypically American, they only get the dopamine when they get the reward. So your brain will actually save the hit until of dopamine until you get the reward. People who go running for the sake of running, their brain's giving them dopamine while they're running.
Yeah.
So if you're reward or fruit orientated, it's not just that like, oh, well, this is maybe like not helpful for your self gratification muscle. It's also like you will not get pleasure in the moment of actually doing the thing. So maybe this explains in a very, very high level, sweeping way, the difference between grandparents that are alive today and the potential of the grandparents we could become. Because I do think that they are a lot more process oriented, and I think we are a lot more reward oriented. Hot take.
Yeah, I know. I'm curious though what you feel like, why that is the case for the younger generation. Is that like through the information age and like the type of media that we've been consuming? Like, where do you feel that difference has arisen from?
I think if you look at my childhood versus my granny's childhood, you know, like my granny, family of nine, on a farm, picking potatoes at no age. Like, a lot more hardship, physical hardship, and a lot less pleasure.
Yeah.
So it was a double whammy. There was less comfort. Sorry, there was more hardship, and there was less pleasure.
Yeah.
And I think that that does something to a person, their character, their brain, their dopamine system. Again, hot take. That bends them towards that process-oriented, delayed gratification way. Versus, if you look at my childhood, given everything, never hungry. Always had a house that was warm. Never had a house that didn't have heat in it. Got a Game Boy from all, you know, young as possible. And anytime I was sad, would just reach for something to change that.
Yeah.
Whether it was a screen or a VHS or, you know, some food or whatever. Whereas they just didn't have that. They didn't have the luxury to have that. And I wonder if it's like, if that luxury is kind of what has put chains on us in some ways.
Yeah, essentially, like, people have become spoiled.
Like, yeah, I mean, you know, I sound like an old man, but I guess that's what I'm getting to.
Yeah, there's something else.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Yeah. But isn't there some cycle, I might like mess this up, but something like hard times create strong people, and strong people create good times, and good times create weak people.
Yes. Yeah.
And weak people create hard times.
Yeah.
And then there's the cycle. So
there's definitely like, and if you want to go back to our Prince of Egypt episode, like there's some that there's a fancy name for this that someone can tell us. It's like a three generation rule. Basically what you said, where it's like, okay, the Israelites are slaves in Egypt. And then the next generation is wandering around the wilderness. They don't know what Egypt's like. They can't remember slavery, but they're still in the desert. And then the third generation is born in the promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. And there's grapes everywhere and fruit everywhere, and there's no war, and it's all easy and it's all fun.
Yeah.
And they have no concept of the wilderness, and they definitely don't have any concept of Egypt.
Yeah.
So they're listening to their parents talking about walking around the wilderness. They're like, shut up, dad.
Yeah.
And they just don't believe their granddad when they're like, yeah, I was a slave.
Yeah.
Because their granddad's dead and didn't have a chance to tell them.
I can't even conceptualize if they haven't had any experience.
Yeah. So we are probably, we are children of the promised land in that analogy.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have, like, heard that idea before, like, that, yeah, we are, like, born into essentially that, like, children that have everything, and, yeah.
And this is even if you grew up in a hard situation.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? This is, like, forget about, like, upper class, middle class, lower class. It's, like, lower class, you're still a child of the promised land.
Yeah, like, generally still have, you know, like, all the distractions, you know, even, like, a stick on the TV or whatever, or that, like, even not all that long ago, like, I'm pretty sure my parents, like, said, oh, they remember getting their first TV and
yeah,
stuff. Like
yeah, that. Yeah.
So, and there's probably something in there as well that, like, there was, I felt like it was really interesting that you commented on, like, having those distractions so you could have, like, a VHS or, like, some sort of, like, sweet food or something like that to distract you anytime that you were sad.
Shout out to Nesquik chocolate milk.
Yeah, shout out to the Nesquik bunny.
Yeah, whatever that cat's name is. Yeah. Crush him, cat.
But the, whenever you have all of those things to act as a crutch in a time when you're in pain, like, if it's a useful crutch and gets you by, you'll just keep leaning on the same crutch. So no wonder people end up going into adulthood, and, like, even things like obesity is, like, everywhere, because the crutch that was available to you in childhood might have been, like, sugary foods. That crutch wasn't available to, like, older generations.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to develop better crutches, essentially, like, yeah. healthier crutches.
Yeah.
Then we've got, like, these very low quality crutches.
Yeah, and, like, you know, let's not romanticize anything. They didn't have crutches. So what happened was people would walk on their sprained ankle. Mm. Follow this metaphor, okay? We're getting really in the weeds here. And some people, they would develop stronger ankles.
Yeah.
And other people, their leg would fall off.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt, like, think about how many... Anyone listening to this, think about parents or grandparents that you at least know of. And there's a lot of trauma as well.
Yeah, massive.
You know, so it's not all like, oh, yeah, yeah, we just need to, like, go back. And, you know,
yeah.
That's not necessarily the solution. Because also, if you were a slave in Egypt or a child of the wilderness, you are going to pass on certain traumas to your promised land baby as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's no way around that. So it's, but I think for what we're talking about today, I think there's a lot of truth in that. And what you said, so if you follow the Israelite story all the way through, the promised land people,
mm-hmm.
in the biblical language, they turned away from the Lord, their God. And they threw out the customs of their ancestors.
Yeah.
And it all went belly up.
Well, this kind of, like, comes pretty much full circle to what we were talking about before at the start, where...
And then they end up in slavery again, by the way.
Yeah, there you go, the cycle.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we were talking about at the start, where it's upon the person to respect the father, like, where they've come from, and... that, but, like, add something new and revivify the father or the thing that they came from, whether that's the culture or whatever, and not throw the baby out with the bathwater, like, not be like, oh, well, this is just a little shit then, and, like,
yeah.
Like, the postmodern idea of, like, well, it's all just ideas.
Throw it all out. Everything's a construct.
Yeah. But, like, those constructs got you to the point where you can argue what a construct is and isn't, so, like, maybe a bit of respect for it. Yeah, like... come to it with the respect that's due for the, being the thing that brought you here. And, you know, that's not to say that things have to remain static and stuck forever, definitely not, but respecting where you came from, I feel like, is a really important part of that. And then doing the subtle changes and continuing to grow and develop things from there.
Yeah. Well, I think what Baruch's doing is respecting, like, a age-old human tradition,
mm-hmm.
of collaborating with nature. Like I said at the top, this is an age-old thing that we can do on our kitchen windowsill.
Yeah.
You know, or
on the balcony of our office building in Belfast, or in a raised bed on a bit of concrete in the back of our garden.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, like, you are, you know, there's a lot of talk about grinding, you know, people lying down in the middle of a forest or taking their shoes off, or, you know, even swimming in the sea, like a lot of stuff we've talked about before, trying to connect back to nature. Like, what better way to do so than to literally, like, co-create and participate in the growing of all things?
Yeah.
To watch something go from a seed into soil that you've prepared and compost, and watch that sucker grow, and you weed it, and you take care of it, and it feeds your family, and it feeds the insects that eat it as well. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the season, it dies. You collect the seeds, and you go again.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild.
I think it's just such a cool thing that, like, Brooke, like, there are schools out there, like, bringing Brooke in and, like, sharing this stuff with kids. And I don't know about you, but, like, I definitely didn't have anything like that in school. No. Not that stuck with me anyway, or that I have any memory of. And, like, that feels like really, really valuable stuff that's being shared with, like, a new generation that hopefully will, like, take some of these things on. We are, like, are in a weird generation of, like, in between, where, like, things do feel a bit crumbly in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
And but it's also a great opportunity, like, to, okay, like, things in the way of the world in the minute are less than ideal.
Mm-hmm.
There's an opportunity here to, like, stop and assess that and, like, make some positive changes, and things like what Brooke's doing are amazing.
And to build on that slightly, if you look at any source of wisdom that's going from anywhere over the last 2,000 years, from, like, Martin Luther King to, like, Greek philosophy to religions around the world, in some ways, it's always all been about giving to the next generation.
Yeah.
And that's built into the human life cycle. Like, not even the human life cycle, just the life cycle. Any animal. Like, you have kids, and all of your attention goes into those kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then those kids grow up, and all their attention goes into their kids.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like, you know, the generation that's in Egypt, they were doing it for the generation that would go in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And the wilderness generation was doing it for the promised land kids. Mm-hmm. And we, as the promised land kids, as we're experiencing the crumble, as we're experiencing the, like, and I feel it as a father,
mm-hmm.
like, every day of my life, I'm like, how can I help prepare my daughter for the world she is going to be in?
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe it will be a complex and chaotic world. Because that's the way the world has always been, regardless of generational cycles. It's like, that's the world.
Yeah.
And so how do you prepare the next generation for that? And I think that that's where we find a lot of our purpose and a lot of our meaning.
Mm-hmm.
The hard years that you and I go through, the hard decades that people go through, you're scrambling and searching for some gold that you can pass on to whoever's coming up behind you. Because if you don't have that, what do you have?
Yeah, you have essentially, like, I mean, if that's the job of the parent, ultimately, to make their child a strong and competent person to deal with the chaotic world.
But that's the thing. It's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the problem of promised land kids.
Yeah.
Is it's all about us.
Yeah.
And we're like, why are we so miserable? And it's like, because you'll never find the joy if it's all just internally focused, you know?
Yeah, and again, like, there is, like, a bit of a loop back here also to this, like, Eastern and Western thing. Like, the Western thing is so fixed on the self. So, yeah, back to these, like, people who really resist that. Like, I don't know, like, I'm of that, but equally, like, really do see why a culture who didn't have that as, like, a real cornerstone in their society, like, would really want to resist that and be, you know, even things like Instagram and TikTok and the idea of like the social media celebrity, and ask kid what they want to be now, a YouTuber is probably like the most popular thing. Like, that feels scary. You know, how many kids are like, I want to be a farmer? Wouldn't have been me, I tell you that much.
I tell you what, shout out, there's an awesome 16 year old dude that comes to a youth group that I'm involved in, and it's his lifelong dream is to like be in that natural world.
So cool.
I'm like, dude, you are the prophet of your generation.
Yeah,
like, we need you, man. Like, I need you. Like, yeah, please, like, whatever you have, like, we want that, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so all this has just been one big advertisement to say, come and volunteer on Baruch's farm.
Yeah.
Who knows what types of conversations you'll have?
Yeah. You mightn't get much shoveling done, but you have a good old chat. I'm sure you're not being paid for it anyway. So.
Oh, man. So, so good. But there is, like, you know, there is something so incredible about working side by side with people and then pausing and having that chat and having that lunch and having that downtime. And, yeah, we don't have enough of that.
Yeah, so come to Baruch's farm. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed today, and it's funny, like, each one of our adventures has felt like really different so far. Yeah, these like podcasts.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm excited for upcoming ventures ahead as well.
Awesome. So yeah, thank you for spending this time with us, from the oak tree to the compost and back again. And on, like we said, you know, check out the full conversation with Baruch on Best of Belfast, and there'll be links to his website in the description of this episode. You know, send him a message, tell him you love him, tell him you want to come and volunteer with him, get yourself and a couple of mates, or, you know, bring the family, like, whatever it is, there's always work to be done. You learn a lot. I learned a lot about farming today.
Yeah, right, like, it's just as you're going about the day, like, oh, the amount, dude, of like farming and just like garden knowledge that these knowledge bombs dropping, like, oh no, you do that for this reason.
Yeah,
like, just things that you can reel off that, yeah, just he's passing on wisdom and experience.
He is, you know, and he's this is not a vegetable business. This is something so much bigger, you know. And when you come inside those four walls, you will find a little bit of what you're looking for. A little bit of what that modern life is not giving you, like, what's missing, can be found somewhere in that soil. Yeah. And it's true.
Oh, it was fun. Yeah, we'll be back anyway, that's for sure. Maybe you'll see us on the farm.
Absolutely. I mean, oh, dude, we should organise a day trip.
Oh, that'd be awesome, yeah.
Like the next, like, you know, producers club party. Shoveling.
Yeah, shovel that. Deliver us.
Incredible. Check out Scott's paws. Check out Scott's paws. Damn, boy, look at those paws. Check out his pod, causewayliving.com. Check Scott out. Get involved with what he's doing. And we will catch you next time. Cheers.
Peace out.